The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Well, the season may be over for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but at least there's some solace for D-backs fans in watching the Los Angeles Dodgers go down last night.
Yeah!
To the Washington Nationals.
Suck it, curse Shaw.
I see what you did there.
You like that, right?
It's
all right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Playoff Kershaw strikes again.
What I don't get, for a little bit of context for those of you who didn't see, the Dodgers were pretty much leading most of the game last night, 3-0, and then the Nationals come back, tie it against Clayton Kershaw, and then later on they give it away with a grand slam by Howie Kendrick, who used to be a Dodger. Baseball is nothing if not poetic, I think, in that way. Here's my thing. I understand that you have to pitch Kershaw because he's one of your best pitchers, probably the best pitcher of the last 5 to 10 years. He's an all-time great. It's a do-or-die game. You have to use him in some way, shape, or form. I get that argument.
I don't get that argument.
However, no, I get it. I don't agree with it. I would say he is so bad historically in the playoffs.
Sure.
And I've never seen a player in any sport so diametrically opposing in the regular season and postseason when it comes to success. I've never seen a guy be so good in the regular season, so bad in the postseason. Dave Roberts cannot put Clayton Kershaw in that game.
2013 NLCS, 7 runs allowed in 4 innings pitched. 2014 NLDS, 11 runs allowed in 12.2 innings pitched. 2016 NLCS, 5 runs allowed in 5 innings pitched. 2017 World Series, 6 runs allowed in 4.2 innings pitched. 2018 World Series, 9 runs allowed in 11 innings pitched.
Wow, 9 and 11 innings?
Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely doesn't show up when playoffs come around. I think at this point it's going to be mental more for him. I have a problem with a team that is successful not continuing their successful
formula
into the playoffs. That's one of the biggest problems for me with the playoffs. I understand what the Washington Nationals were doing. They were doing everything they possibly could to combat the Dodgers. And when you don't have a full roster, but you do have super quality players like they do when it comes to pitching, you do everything you can to make sure those guys are out there deciding the game for you. The Dodgers have a long list of successful players and pitchers and relief pitchers and guys whose job is to come in these scenarios and hold a lead.
Yep.
They are trained for 162 games to come in here and do this. And then you get to this point and you don't stick with the game plan that you've had during the 162 game season.
Like how does Kenley Jansen not pitch in that game last night?
Oh, because he's been terrible.
But I mean,
in the second
yes,
half.
He has. But he's still your closer and your best reliever. And just to me, Dave Roberts lost them this game last night. That's my opinion. I mean, yeah, players got to play and, you know, they have to get their job done. But how in the world, when Juan Soto comes up in the 10th inning and they intentionally walk him and put him on first and load the bases with nobody out, that made no sense because they had their lefty reliever, I can never pronounce, Kolarek or whatever his name is, in their bullpen who Juan Soto's 0-for-4 against with 3 strikeouts, and you're loading the bases on purpose, and then not taking Joe Kelly out of the game. It just made no and bringing Howie Kendrick up, and who hits a grand slam, and then you don't bring a guy in like Kenley Jansen when Joe Kelly is struggling. And I think it's been since August or something like that that Joe Kelly has pitched in more than one inning, and you're asking him to do something he's not comfortable with. It was just weird. I feel like I saw a tweet that was also interesting last night about Dave Roberts. It felt like, I think it was from a Dodgers fan, because I don't know if you guys are like me, but when the Dodgers lose big games, I go to their Twitter account and read all the comments.
Oh,
it's amazing.
It's so good.
It's so fun. It's so bad.
I'll give Dodgers fans the credit when it comes to that, is that they're very realistic.
They're like,
there's not a lot
suck.
Of defending of the team when it comes to these scenarios.
But that tweet I read said it felt like Dave Roberts was trying to give Kershaw a playoff moment, positive playoff moment, rather than manage to win the game. And that kind of resonated with
me.
And
that's
like,
a good
I could
way
see
to look
it.
At it. Yeah. I think that's silly.
It is.
You know,
you should be winning the game.
Right.
That's your job.
That's always what your focus needs to be on. But I do think that that type of stuff does interfere with the manager's decisions. I think that sometimes, like with Torey Lovullo, as we've seen in the past, you have times where a manager wants to build confidence in a player because they know what they're capable of, and so they want to send them out there in this or that
the
scenario.
The playoffs aren't the time
that
for
is
that.
Not the time.
The playoffs
right.
aren't the
no,
time
I
for that
No, I agree with
stuff.
You 100%. Also, I don't know, but if your plan is to bring a starting pitcher in a relief scenario in the playoffs, and you have a 21-game lead in your division, and you clinched it about 2 months before the end of the season, I would say maybe you'd throw him out there in a
maybe.
Relief scenario maybe once or twice before the playoffs come around if that's your intention. I mean, I know that's easier said than done, and I know you don't want to necessarily give away what your game plan is going to potentially be, but man, I just can't imagine abandoning everything that gave you success to win nearly 110 games during the regular season and going with just this throwing whatever sticks against the wall kind of way of managing in the playoffs.
Now, here's the flip side. Had they decided not to go with Clayton Kershaw last night and instead go with Pedro Baez, Kenley Jansen, one of those guys at the tail end of their bullpen, maybe even a guy like Julio Urias or Dustin May or one of those guys that was still available in the bullpen, what if they blow it?
Nobody would have questioned that decision.
But then today, would anybody be looking at the Dodgers saying, Dave Roberts, you had Clayton Kershaw, your best pitcher, not this year, but over the last couple of years.
Walker Buehler is their best
pitcher. Yeah, he's their best pitcher, and he pitched to start the game.
He's so good. Disgusting.
That's first and foremost. But wouldn't we all be looking at him like, this was a do-or-die game. If this was the Diamondbacks in 2001, 2002, and Curt Schilling started the game. Curt Schilling started the game and went six innings, whatever it is, five innings. And you get towards the end of the game, and you didn't pitch Randy Johnson on short rest.
Did Randy Johnson give up seven runs and four innings pitched in the 1996 NLCS?
No, that's the difference. Randy Johnson didn't have that history, and I have no idea if the Diamondbacks ever even used Randy Johnson in relief. They didn't really have to because he was dominating and starting.
Right.
But my point is simply, like, would we be questioning the inverse had they decided not to use Clayton Kershaw and hold on to him for a game coming up?
Absolutely not.
I don't think
absolutely so. Absolutely not. What I don't feel like reading the list of what we just read earlier, but seven runs allowed in four innings pitched, 11 runs allowed in 12.2. When you have a history like that and the manager chooses not to go with that pitcher, even if things go wrong, nobody's going to question that. Nobody's going to question that because I don't think Dodger fans even wanted to see Kershaw in that game.
Trust me, I agree with you guys. I totally agree that it was the wrong decision. I didn't want Kershaw coming into that game if I were Dave Roberts. Would not have done that just based on the history alone of him in the postseason and the options you had available to you. I'm just simply making the case, shouldn't the best players play? I know I'm trying to advocate for a position I don't stand for, but
here's the thing that was weird too about it was it wasn't that Clayton Kershaw was coming in because, you know, a bunch of lefties are coming up or their best hitters. Before the game, Dave Roberts said Clayton Kershaw will be the first pitcher out of the bullpen tonight. That was his plan, no matter what.
Yeah.
Clayton Kershaw, as soon as Walker Buehler comes out of the game, it will be 22 Clayton Kershaw coming out of the bullpen.
You can't manage like that, especially if you're going to...
Why? But like, why is that the plan?
No, that's what I'm saying. You can't manage like that. And you can't manage a game thinking, we're going to have two starters. One's going to get us halfway through the game. The other one's going to get us a halfway
that
through the game. And that's going to be the perfect
scenario.
It basically
was like saying, I don't care about our regular season plan that we have, that we've been doing this whole year, our analytics, our matchups. Clayton Kershaw's coming in.
More importantly, this is the division series. You still have the National League Championship Series. You can't disrupt your entire rotation just for the purpose of winning one game. I understand if you don't win this game, there is no NLCS for you.
Yeah.
But you also have to think that through, too. You know, if you're pitching Walker Buehler in the final game of this series, that means he can't go in game one of the next
series.
There's
a reason why the Nationals didn't throw Max Scherzer last night.
Yeah, he was in the bullpen.
Yeah.
He was ready to
go.
You're right. There was a reason for that.
Correct me if I'm wrong. 2017 Arizona Diamondbacks wild card game.
Okay.
Zach Greinke starts the game.
Yes.
Robbie Ray in relief.
Yep.
Same sort of thing. Torey Lovullo did it.
I think they might have had a plan, though, because...
Granted, they win that game, and then game one of the NLDS ends up being Patrick Corbin.
No, it was Taiwan Walker.
Was it Taiwan Walker?
Yeah.
It was Taiwan Walker. Because Patrick Corbin didn't end up pitching in that
Patrick
series,
Corbin,
right?
The first time he faced the Dodgers in the playoffs was this year.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Now, that was another decision entirely that we can debate all day long whether that was good or bad. But Torey Lovullo did it.
I'm not saying it was a good move, but...
I don't know. Did we criticize it the same way? It ended up working for them because they won the game.
Because it works, of course. And just like today, if Clayton Kershaw would have won and he would have came through for them, then we would be talking about this in a completely different scenario.
Would we be talking about it at all?
Probably not, because it wouldn't be as big of a story, and the Dodgers kind of were expected to go on.
We
all had already... You know, basically put this as a Dodgers-Astros World Series. That's pretty much what the majority of baseball fans
Well, I mean, I think the Yankees are making a pretty good case for themselves.
I think they are, too.
But you're right.
Not to mention the fact that the Rays are making...
The Rays are still in it,
But I'm just saying, overall, I think that it was kind of a foregone conclusion that we were going to see the Astros versus the Dodgers.
I think the fact that Torey Lovullo in 2017, which was the last time the Diamondbacks were in the playoffs, made the same decision that Dave Roberts did... And it worked for him, didn't work for Dave. We're killing Dave Roberts over it. We didn't kill Torey over it. The difference to me is only this, that the guy that Dave Roberts put in the game is historically awful in the postseason.
That's it. Robbie Ray wasn't. So if you would have put Robbie Ray in that game, he was historically bad. And
but to
he blew
me,
it.
It's two different concepts. There's was the decision correct, and then was the player correct?
I think in baseball, they
don't... You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
The player was wrong to me. He picked the wrong player.
Yeah.
But I agree with the decision that the best player should play. He wasn't the best player in that moment.
So maybe if you do that, maybe instead of Kershaw, Hyunjin Ryu comes out of the bullpen or something.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I didn't keep track of when the last time he threw was.
I don't know.
No, that's a really good point. Yeah. Really what it comes down to is the decision to use Kershaw, period. I mean, that's the questionable decision. That's the thing that's always going to hang over this series this year for the Dodgers is everybody knew Kershaw was bad in the playoffs. Kershaw comes in the elimination game in a critical, you know, relief appearance. I'm sure Dodgers fans would have much rather see Dave Roberts just use the bullpen. Just maybe one pitcher for one guy. Then
well, they have good options.
Whatever, right, because you can play the scenarios. Like, that's my favorite way of managing a big game like this, is fully utilizing your bullpen, breaking down, you know, all of your stats, the information you have, who has the highest success rates against what pitchers. I mean, these are National League guys, so they've played the Nationals several times. They have plenty of stats and information on their own pitching staff against the Nationals. And I don't know where it lies. Maybe they saw that as being their best option,
add up. You can almost argue that Dave Martinez made the same amount of risk by bringing in Corbin again last night.
Right.
Because he blew that game.
Blew it.
He was awful, and he was great last night. So it worked for Dave Martinez. So it's the playoffs are a different animal, man. But
I don't think managers really believe in, like, curses or guys being bad in the playoffs or any of that. I think that, like, especially for someone like Kershaw, a lot of it probably gets written off to, like, bad luck and that was one time and whatever. But eventually you got to start considering the entire body of work and start looking at a guy who is potentially just...
It's certainly not a small sample size anymore.
Right, exactly.
They keep making the playoffs and he keeps sucking. Right. So, I mean, I hate to put it that way, but that's the truth.
I've had a lot of people ask me why I'm so against the Dodgers, and realistically, I think it comes down to, like, one, they're division rivals, so when you're a fan of the Diamondbacks or you cover this team, it does get really obnoxious to see, like, the stadium here filled with Dodger fans, and that's nothing on them. That just means that they have really good fans, that they have a big presence here in Phoenix.
It's the city of Los Angeles, too.
It is.
It's the second biggest city in America.
Right. But
I don't know if that's true, but I just said it.
Yeah, you're just throwing facts out there unverified. I think that the Dodgers, it's more of the fact that they continue to have a big payroll. They continue to kind of steamroll the season. And, you know,
they've won seven straight division titles.
Right. It's just one of those things that it's hard unless you're a fan of them. They're right there in the Yankees category without the actual World Series wins, where it's hard to root for them unless you're a fan of that team.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of want to see them, you know, be defeated. And
for me, it's
easy.
That's what we got. It's easy. You root against the Dodgers because the Dodgers spend the most money. The Dodgers spend significantly more money than any other team historically on their roster, because in baseball there is no limitation on how much money you spend on your players. There are certain taxes and fees that you have to pay on top of that. But
willingly pay those if you have the money.
Yeah, if Frank McCourt wanted to pay that, then he did. If Magic Johnson wanted to pay that, then he did. It's just the way that the game works. And that creates this inequality and opportunity in baseball that really stands out when you look at teams like the Oakland Athletics and the Tampa Bay Rays, who are still in it, by the way. And that's why I root against teams like the Dodgers, because it's so easy to look at them and be like, that's a team that can never figure it out and never get over the hump and win the World Series, despite the clear advantage that they have financially when it comes to paying for players.
It's just the beautiful thing about baseball is you literally can't buy a World Series.
And you can't predict it either.
And you can't predict it.
Thank God for the Rays, the Royals.
Right. I mean, if you could predict it, the Pittsburgh Pirates would have the best pitching staff in baseball right now if you could predict anything.
Yeah, well, and by the way, this is a Diamondbacks podcast.
Oh yeah,
I don't want to veer too much.
Oh yeah,
but before we get back to the Diamondbacks, I will bring this up because we've talked about the teams that are still in it. We haven't even mentioned the St. Louis Cardinals and Paul Goldschmidt. By the way,
hey,
I had to mention it.
I got to see him celebrating a NLDS win in the locker room with champagne and whatnot. That was really cool.
That's pretty cool.
And we get to see him versus Patrick Corbin. So that
will be
nice
interesting
to see.
So let me put it to you guys this way, because I believe, if you are Major League Baseball and you're sitting around a conference room table this morning, the worst possible scenario for the World Series that you could imagine is the Tampa Bay Rays and the St. Louis Cardinals.
Ooh.
That's my opinion.
No.
Because it's the Cardinals and the Nationals in the National League, and then it's the Rays. And I'll tell you why I think that. The Rays versus the Astros still in the ALDS,
and then the Yankees
gets whichever one wins that series. The Rays is clearly the team you don't want. Business-wise.
Clearly.
You want the Astros or the Yankees, obviously.
Correct. In the National League, the Nationals have star power. The Cardinals, I believe, do not.
The Nationals have star power?
I believe they do.
I believe you're wrong.
Max Scherzer is the best pitcher in baseball in the last 5 years.
I'm not disagreeing with
Steven
that.
Steven Strasburg is a really great pitcher. Juan Soto is one of the great young stars in this game.
Steven Strasburg has 6 innings left in his arm before he's gone.
That may be, but he's electric.
What? He'll get paid before that's over.
Let me tell you something.
I love the players on the Nationals way more than I do the Cardinals, and I like the Cardinals, and I can explain to you why, but they do not have star power.
Also,
no,
Anthony
Rendon.
Goldschmidt is the only player on that team that the regular baseball fan knows by name.
It doesn't matter. St. Louis Cardinals easily have one of the biggest fan bases in baseball.
Are you talking about from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, if you're talking about watching it, period, you're absolutely wrong. The Washington, D.C. area has a population of 633,000 people.
That's not... Okay, you have Baltimore, you have the whole coast.
I don't care. Those people root for their own teams, Steve.
Do you know how many cities are close to Washington, D.C.?
I don't care how many.
It's not about who's in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Steve, how many World Series titles do the St. Louis Cardinals have? The St. Louis Cardinals.
I don't know the answer to that, but I'm guessing it's 5, 6?
You want to go with 5?
I don't know.
Are we dating back to the 1920s?
Oh, yeah, that's true. They do go back way far, yeah.
I mean, no, we're talking about in the modern day of the World Series. They have 11 World Series.
11, okay, wow.
They are the Yankee equivalent in the National League to winning the most World Series. They have the most World Series wins of any National League team.
Okay.
They have a cathedral to baseball in St. Louis where have nothing to do but to watch baseball. They took their football team away, Steve.
Not arguing.
They don't even have their football team. And then it got really good in another city? That's not fair.
I agree with you.
But I'm saying that the St. Louis Cardinals would have a much bigger fan presence and, I think, interest in them. I think that the St. Louis Cardinals are like this super wholesome team. And I think that's the appeal there, is that you don't know anybody. So no matter who they went up against in the American
League. That is never a good business decision.
No, I'm just saying.
Our appeal is that you don't know a single player on the field.
No, the appeal is that we get to know them in the World Series, because they'll be going up against either the evil empire of the Yankees.
People don't want to do that.
Gigantic financial machine of the Houston Astros.
People do not want to get to know a new player during the World Series. They want to watch their favorite player kill the other team.
Okay, so you named,
that's what they want to do.
You named two pitchers on the Washington Nationals that are
and Juan
superstars.
Soto. I love Trey Turner as one of the great young players in baseball.
Good for you, Steve.
There's
you
some
know the
great
players,
players
on the team. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they're not like
how many St.
names.
Louis Cardinals players are you thinking are ideal household star players?
I don't know. Does Adam
and
Wainwright still play for the team?
Exactly. You don't know.
No.
There's Paul Goldschmidt.
Yes, he does.
I figured he does.
There's Paul Goldschmidt who's on the wrong side of 30.
Yadier Molina.
Yeah,
Yadier Molina, who's on the wrong side
Come
of 30.
On. Do you know how many people would be excited to see a Molina in the World
Marcel
Series?
Marcel Ozuna.
No one is going to get
Dexter
overly
Fowler.
Excited. No one's going to get excited about Colton Wong.
Matt Carpenter.
Or Tommy Edman. Or
I love Colton Wong. What are you saying?
I do too. The baseball purists who watch the game a lot, they love teams like the Cardinals and the Rays.
Right.
But neither of them have star power.
Ooh, nobody loves the Rays. Not even people in Tampa
Bay. I like
Bay
watching
love
the,
Rays.
The Rays.
People who like baseball don't even like the Rays.
I do
this opener
do.
Stuff.
Okay.
They win every year. And
Kevin,
they have
they?
And I can't name a single player on that team.
See, look at how excited you
it
are.
It would be a fun World Series to watch for a baseball purist. For the average fan that you're trying to capture their attention, you do not want the Cardinals. You do not want the Rays in the World Series.
I disagree.
You don't.
And I think if you're baseball, you want the Cardinals now at this
I
point.
I want St. Louis's fan base watching because you're right. That is a significant fan base. It's a baseball town through and through. They also have a hockey team, by the way.
And they all live there, so they go
I
all
almost
the
said they don't have any major sports, and I forgot about the Blues.
The Blues that just won the
they are actually pretty good.
Yeah, they're better. Not bad.
No, I would make the case you would rather have the Nationals. I'd rather see the young stars of today for the Nationals than I would...
I disagree.
Adam Wainwright.
I definitely don't want to see the Rays. That's all I don't want to see. I'm good with either...
That we can all agree
I'm
on.
I'm good with either the Cardinals or the Nationals.
But if the Rays take down the Astros...
Then it's Yankees.
What's stopping them from taking down the Yankees?
Ooh,
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's the Rays might be in the
Exhaustion,
World Series.
Exhaustion, perhaps.
And
this would be
the most Rays team ever to get into the World Series.
Imagine,
you don't know anybody.
I don't hate the prospect of a Nationals Rays.
Who is the Rays'
World
best
Series.
Player?
Ooh, that's a good question. Tommy Pham, probably.
Yep.
Blake Snell, who by the way has been awful this year.
Imagine this.
Won a Cy Young last
Imagine
year?
This. The game one starter of the World Series between the Rays and the Cardinals. Chaz Rowe. The game opener.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Do you see what I mean, though?
Oh, no.
There's no star power there. That's the worst case scenario is Rays versus Cardinals.
Nah, I disagree.
You're saying Rays versus Nationals?
Rays versus Nationals.
Okay. I'm okay with disagreeing on that.
Yeah. But regardless, I want to see...
What's the best case scenario?
It was Astros Dodgers.
Dodgers.
I don't know. There's not a best case scenario.
So is the
for
best
me.
Case for you the Cardinals and the Astros? Cardinals and Yankees?
I would say Cardinals and Astros.
Okay.
I think that the Astros once again are the pre-crowned winner of the World Series, and just to see them go to Game 5 with Tampa Bay has made everybody go, whoa, like that's crazy, even though
it's pretty
baseball
entertaining.
And anything can happen. And I love that about it. I don't find it to be – first of all, I don't like when teams just steamroll other teams. No matter how good the team is, I want it to be a series, and I want it to come down to that.
Even the
game
yesterday, the Cardinals and Braves, I'm like, this game sucks.
Yeah,
it's over in the third inning.
It really was. It was. And so I think the
– I would have rather had the Braves in the World Series than the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch Ronald Acuña Jr.
Yes.
I'd rather watch Ozzie Albies.
I think that would have
been Freddie
Freeman. Freddie Freeman even,
But regardless, what I want out of the National League now is an underdog, and we're going to get that.
Yeah.
We're going to get that. Most likely, we're going to get the Yankees or the Astros, and that's going to be the story. And I think
Rays do not like that you just said that.
Well,
they are listening.
And honestly, I know Matt Duffy is a fan of this show, but I named one of the players.
Who's that?
He's their third baseman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Abisail Garcia.
Anyway.
I just love saying that guy's name.
Eric
Kevin
Sogard.
Kiermaier still playing?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he does.
Yes, I named a new one. There we go.
Good job.
Willie Adames.
We're killing it.
I mean, this is why we do a baseball
G-Man
part, right?
Choi, the first baseman.
That's their best
I
player
love
right
him.
There.
Yeah. He
people,
is
People
awesome.
Listen to this podcast and they wonder if we actually watch baseball.
Yeah, or
like, do they actually know anything?
Do these guys know anything?
Like I mentioned earlier, this is a Diamondbacks podcast.
It is a Diamondbacks podcast.
When? It's tough because they haven't exactly been doing anything lately, but I do stay up at night wondering what Mike Hazen is thinking about.
Oh, God. You know, I still think about it. I still think about him managing my life, and that's something that I really need to happen.
I don't think he was up for that, by the way.
I will say that they are. It was a pleasant surprise, and all things considered, you have to give them a lot of credit. They finished this season strong, and I think they gave Diamondbacks fans plenty to have hope for the future. I think it's unrealistic to think that they're going to compete for the World Series next year, but I think that they do have the right pieces in place for them to be successful and good next year. I'm interested to see what happens. I'm interested to see how the Dodgers overreact to this loss and see if they do anything crazy to try to shake up their team. I want to see them fire Dave Roberts.
I was going to say, I don't know if it's a hot take, but bold prediction, I think they fire Dave Roberts.
I think
Wouldn't that have to happen soon, like today?
The Red Sox fired Dave Dombrowski, the architect of their team, the year after they won the World Series. Anything is possible now.
Gabe Kapler got fired today.
Not to mention the fact that the Boston Red Sox made a really decent run at a postseason, despite the fact of how terrible they were early on, right?
Yep.
So
you
can't really fault them.
They were getting better.
I think that's kind of what happened to the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers were too good too early. You can't maintain that level of success throughout the whole entire 162-game season, and you get to the end and you kind of, you know, don't have much left in the tank. The Nationals and other teams, they were catching fire at the right time. They were already in a race in the last month of the year, so they needed to basically be at the top of their game in order just to make the playoffs, and then they had to play their way into the playoffs, and then they had to, you know, get past a team like the Dodgers.
So let's go back to the D-backs. Obviously, none of us had 85 wins written down at the beginning of the season.
I still don't believe it. I need to double check to make sure they didn't end
up at 500.
It
was 85.
It was 85 wins. Yes.
I can't remember if we did predictions or not.
It was 85 and 77 was their record.
I definitely picked like 72 or something like that.
I can't remember what I said.
I played the low game.
I definitely was positive, so I went above 500.
Okay.
Probably not much. We'll be interested to see.
We'll pat you on the back.
Thank you. I want that.
Derek, you wanted us to go through and hand out awards as people do on podcasts at the end of seasons.
Yes.
What did you have in mind for categories? And we will give you our best.
All right. Well, first category is Rookie of the Year for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Easy.
And they had plenty of rookies to choose from. So, Steve, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Ketel Marte.
No, we did this before. this happened
Steve.
Before.
You might have been out of town when I did that. No. Ketel Marte, he's a rookie center fielder.
Oh, I hate you. For doing that. I think I was here for that, and I still hate it.
Yeah, probably.
I don't like what you're doing.
I'm not allowed to do that.
Ooh, it's tough.
Do you have an honorable mention, at least, for your second place Rookie of the Year?
No.
All right. Bear?
So stubborn.
I was like,
You know, I'm going to go with Alex Young.
All right.
I think Alex Young surprised a lot of people this season when he was kind of thrown into the fire because every pitcher got hurt. And
no one expected him to come up this year.
He was terrible in AAA this season. He was terrible.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with Alex Young.
Yeah,
that's
I like that.
Yeah.
He ends the
it's
season.
Not as good as my pick, but it's good.
7-5 with a 3.56 ERA.
Not bad. Pretty good.
Yeah. More importantly,
almost threw a no hitter.
He started 15 games for the Diamondbacks and gave them 15, you know, quality start. Not all quality starts, but 15 good starts that they needed. During a time when
they needed some length.
They needed anything.
Can I make a real pick?
Sure.
Yeah.
Zach Gallen.
No, you can't do that.
All right.
That was my pick.
You make a pick.
Zach Gallen.
Oh, wow. That's a good pick.
Yeah, it's a good pick,
that's
right?
That's a really good pick.
Yeah, just incredible. I mean, I don't care about the record, but in 15 starts for the Diamondbacks, had a 2.81 ERA. Again, like him and Young, it's the same thing. It has to give you hope for the future to have these two guys be a big part of the rotation going forward. And to have basically discovered both of them this season, you know, in a season that was kind of a throwaway season by that point, you know, by the time Alex Young was starting, they really didn't have a whole lot of hope left. The wild card was still the only thing really in their sights, and you know, the trade for Zach Gallen, that's still an incredible trade to me.
Gave away your top prospect by a lot of people's standards, probably the only prospect that a lot of people could have named at that time. And if that didn't work out, we'd probably all be sitting here being like, why would they give away their top prospect for this guy?
Yeah, right, absolutely.
And he is worth every penny.
Now what it's more, the bigger question, and I think the question historically going forward is going to be, is why did the Marlins give up Zach Gallen for a prospect
that had think they
even,
were? Yeah,
yeah. Right.
I don't know.
All right, so that leads me to the next question, next award, Transaction of the Year. Oh. Mike Hazen.
I think I might have just...
You might have just...
I might have just said it.
Might have just said it. You want
Zach Allen? Yeah, I mean, the Zach Allen trade is... I got to look at my options, though. Zach Allen was definitely the one that paid off the most, I think.
Okay.
I'll give you mine. Zach Greinke.
Yes.
The Zach Greinke trade, because with that one move, you single-handedly made your farm system... You propelled it back into the top 10, I think, by pipeline.
Sure.
MLB pipeline. And you got the Astros to take a decent amount of money, and you saved some money on that, which you can now use to maybe go get a center fielder and move Cattell back to second, which I'm in favor of. Not that he did a bad job in center field, but
no, it's just to prove Steve wrong about the whole, like,
yeah, I don't want any more of this crap.
Yeah.
So for me, Zach Greinke, and you know, I read that story on SI about from the Astros' perspective at how Mike Hazen,
it's a great story,
dealt with that whole ordeal where the Astros called him. He's like, I'm not doing it if you don't give me Josh Rojas.
He held up the whole deal for Josh Rojas.
30 minutes, Derek, before. And they texted Mike Hazen and they said, do we have a deal? His response, confirmed. Not say,
such a robot.
Yeah, let's do
so
it.
Gangster.
He's a machine. He's a machine.
He's the fixer. He's the wolf.
My favorite part of that article is the president of the Astros walks into the room half an hour before the deadline and goes, how are we looking on the Greinke trade? And, you know,
like,
Jeff
doesn't
Luna
look like
says,
he's going to do it.
I don't know. They're holding out for this kid, Josh Rojas. And the president of the Astros goes, who is that?
Oh. The president goes,
that's how you know Mike Hazen ripped them off.
Josh Rojas is going to make him.
The president of the Astros, or the owner, or whatever it was, he goes in the room and goes, who is Josh Rojas? And they say, oh, he's this guy. He's having a good year. He's a utility
guy. 26 round pick.
He goes, what prospect number is he? 26? No, go at him.
No, he literally said, so we're holding up a deal for Zach Greinke for a utility infielder
who had one good year.
Having a good year this year.
Mm-hmm. Who was picked in the 26th round, by the way.
And to be honest, Josh Rojas is the icing on the cake for that deal. Really is, because you can say anything you want. I completely agree with you. The farm system was being they were arming their farm system. They were revamping it, retooling it. But that move and those prospects really are the proven prospects that people think are actually going to play.
Yeah.
You could say all you want about all the first-round picks they had, but you don't know if any of those guys are actually going to ever see, you know, AAA, let alone Major League time. But when you talk about not only being able to get the level of talent that they got from the Astros, but the impact Josh Rojas alone had on this team,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to – and not to mention – you got rid of an aging player that had a huge contract, and you got the Astros to take a good chunk of that contract as well. I that was magic to me, and I still don't know how he did it.
I have two honorable mentions for transaction of the year.
Okay.
One of them is exiting the three-catcher system, which I think that transaction is technically the DFAing of John Ryan Murphy.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's officially when they did it the first time. Caleb Joseph also played into that a little bit, but... yeah, so that would be one of them. And then I think this counts as a transaction. Draft night. I mean, holy crap. The Diamondbacks went in with the most picks in Major League Baseball. They had seven of the first 75 picks.
Something like that.
And they signed everybody through the first 19 rounds.
Yeah,
they're high schoolers, too. They drafted a lot of high schoolers, and everyone, I was kind of following the draft, and everyone's like, wow, the D-backs are being risky here. We're drafting all these high school kids. It's like Corbin Carroll was committed to go to UCLA, and they signed him. And
they had a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
They even had some guys that played
surprised.
In the College World Series. I mean, they got a handful of guys, a lot of pitchers, who are experienced and can probably jump straight to double, maybe even triple A when they get here, if they haven't already. And then they have a lot of guys, like you said, who are in high school who might take a while but have huge upside. Overnight, they went from one of the worst farm systems to one of the best.
Yeah, it was incredible. And, I mean, honestly, it's also a factor that Mike Hazen is the one behind these decisions. Hazen has proven already at a major league level and even at a top AAA, AA level that he has an actual talent for talent. He has an actual talent for acquiring talent. He sees something in guys that people don't see. He makes decisions that make you kind of scratch your head sometimes, mm-hmm. and then it works out. He is able to, you know, do a lot with very little. I mean, every one of his major transactions has involved the Diamondbacks having very little risk on their end as far as what they gave up for what they were going after. And that's, I think that's why everything he's done has been so good.
Give us one more award.
All right.
Let's wrap this thing up. Give us the best award category that you can think
of. Let's do team MVP. Mm. Team MVP.
Most valuable player.
Yeah, that's usually what that stands for.
I didn't know if you were going for
some sort of other fancy acronym, Steve.
Yeah.
I'll start.
Okay.
I will let you start. Go ahead.
Eduardo Escobar.
Mm.
Okay.
Not only, I mean, there's also, you know, Ketel Marte, but for me,
you're allowed to take one.
For me, it's for me, it's Eduardo Escobar because number one, his production this year was fantastic.
It was awesome.
He had over 100 RBIs, over 30 home runs, had a decent average. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But another thing is, two, he wanted to stay here,
he did.
Mike Hazen signed him for less than $30 million over 3 years.
Wasn't it like 21?
21 million over 3 years.
$7 million a year.
And then three, he is a fantastic teammate. Oh my goodness, he's a great clubhouse guy to have around. And so I think it's just a general club team MVP, not only just on the field production. I go with Eduardo Escobar.
They're doing a lot of social media stuff with him lately, and I like it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like his English is decent, you know what I mean?
It's not the best.
Like he's incapable of English, but it's funny that he, of all people, has kind of become this like character because you never could have done that with Goldie.
Right.
As much as they tried to do things marketing-wise with him, they just couldn't do it. I'll take Ketel Marte because if he doesn't emerge as the star player on this team, which I don't think you can really argue he had the most productive season of anybody, in a year where he switched from playing second base slash maybe a little bit of shortstop to playing center field full-time, and at the All-Star break, we talked about this, he was the All-Star starter at second base. At the time, I didn't vote for him to play second base because he wasn't playing second base. He was not even playing second base as well as he was center field. And in the first season where you make that transition and to play a position that, quite frankly, he's never played before, I had a huge concern over whether or not he was going to become the everyday center fielder. Not only did he do that, he is stellar. He is a plus center fielder, and now their best player. You just found a new best player. You found him in this season. That speaks MVP to me. It screams MVP.
I can't disagree with either player. I think Marte, you know, the way that he stepped up, especially early on, I think that's the thing really that I love about both of these guys. For me, it is Ketel Marte, and I just think that it's the way that these guys both received their contracts and then exploded offensively and did even better than they were doing prior to being signed. You know, I don't know. It's a common thing for athletes to kind of slide and regress a little bit after they got their comfortable contract. You know, it's not like these were huge money deals, but they were, you know, the next few years are taken care of and you're going to make really good money. But it's just the way that Escobar, you know, proceeded to have a career season this year. 171 hits, 118 RBI, 35 home runs, things that he's never done before. And then when you talk about Ketel Marte, you know, it's unfortunate that they had to shut him down and he kind of got worn out before the end of the season. But they were already in a position when they did that where they weren't really going to be competing for anything. And you just look at his batting average, hitting .329 in 2019 with 187 hits and 32 home run. Those two guys, I mean, combined, that's your offensive core of the team. And those are two guys that you really didn't expect to step up this season as big as they both did. So
it got to the point at the end of the season where Ketel Marte was, I think, in my opinion, a top five candidate for the MVP of the league.
He had a .981 OPS. That's incredible.
I mean, you think Bellinger, Yelich, who else was in that running? Acuna, probably?
Yeah.
And then I think right after that is probably Ketel Marte.
I mean, his highest batting average before the season
Freeman maybe in that mix? I don't know.
His highest batting average before the season was .283 in 2015.
Not
his
bad.
His highest OPS before the season was .768 last year. This year he's
That's
hitting .329, .981. Yeah. I think the Diamondbacks had enough success this season to hang their hat on. This wasn't expected to be a successful season after the loss of Paul Goldschmidt, after the loss of Patrick Corbin, and Pollock, who was awful in the playoffs, by the way. I just wanted to point out.
Yeah.
But
0 for 13, 11 strikeouts.
0 for 13 with 11 strikeouts. He was a sleeper agent working on the Diamondbacks' behalf. But I just think that, you know, the course has been changed for this team. And even when you talk about somebody like Paul Goldschmidt, had he remained here, I feel like his best years could have potentially been wasted on a team who's still going to be kind of going towards a more youthful movement and bringing in younger guys and trying to win a few years down the line instead of any time immediately. But it's going to be fun to watch, and I think they're going to be very competitive next season. And honestly, if they build on this year, we could see them challenging for the NL West title.
Well, that's a wrap for the season for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a wrap for us here on the Ain't No Fang podcast. I anticipate that we'll still come in and do some things here in the postseason. I mean,
the Diamondbacks make some moves.
There's
this
no lack of drama coming in the next couple of weeks in the postseason, but then also, of course, Mike Hazen does seem to be active in the offseason, and so we're going to be dealing with a lot of those things here coming up in the next couple of months. But in the meantime, expect us back. I anticipate you guys will want to talk a little bit about the drama going on in the postseason.
Oh, yeah.
It has had no shortage of it so far. I can only anticipate that increases, especially because Derek said he doesn't like the Rays. So I'm anticipating the Rays will win that series. They will go on to the World Series, and they will be the bane of our existence. So look forward to that.
I still see their mascot as being just some guy named Ray, you know, with like a mustache.
Like a pizza delivery
guy?
Yeah,
totally. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Rays.
I could kind of see that. We appreciate you listening to us all season long. And like I said, although the season may be over, it's not for us here on the Ain't No Fang podcast. Thank you for listening here at ArizonaSports.com.